Hi, I'm Patty Repko. Is this, can you hear me? Is it on?
No.
Oh, yeah, it's on. Okay. So I'm Patty Repko, and I'm NEPT 2015, so started the beginning of this year. And I guess I'm like a lot of people here. I started my journey as a health coach through just personal challenges with, can you hear me? Just, okay, a personal journey into my own health, because I was working between 12 and 16 hours a day for 3 years straight without taking a day off, and almost killed myself, literally completely burned myself out to where I couldn't even function anymore. And that's what led me to go to the Institute for Integrative Nutrition and kind of started my journey down this path. And I came across Dr. Rita Marie through, I think it was Ocean Robbins Summit, actually, I think. And I started to hear and listen to her, and I was amazed by her energy and the amount of information that she gives everybody, and just her passion and compassion and the way she is with everybody. So I signed up for the GRAND program. The GUT program was the first thing I did, and followed it 100%. And for the first time in my life, after 3 years of doing this, I started to feel better. Even after having such a clean diet and everything I was doing, I did not feel well, and I realized I had leaky gut, and I never thought I did. So her GRAND program is what made me realize that. And then from there, I went into the Before Be Gone and did the blood sugar balancing, lost 12 pounds, and got my energy back. But I'm still, you know, still working on myself. But and after that, so then I signed up for NEPT and haven't looked back. She's just an amazing, amazing, amazing lady. So without further ado, Dr. Rita Marie.
Hello, hello, hello. Did everybody have a good lunch? Yay. Anybody who's in NEPT, new or returning or continuing, whatever, if you didn't get your second raffle ticket, go back and see Jan. The tickets we gave out at lunch, and if you weren't at lunch or you missed it under your plate, you got an extra raffle ticket because we have a special NEPT-only raffle. And we have, oh, yes, so remember yesterday we talked about how some people couldn't make it. You know how that happens. And Shonda's been watching on the live stream. I hope she's still on. Hello, wherever. I don't even know where the camera went to.
Can you even wait and do Shonda's after we do the raffle? Then she can see.
Oh, over there. Okay, great. So the live stream's on, right? Okay, so we're going to play Shonda. Shonda is an RN and a nutritionist who's up in Canada, and she joined the program back last January. And she couldn't make it, so she made us a cute little video.
Pardon? They're here. They're watching. Hi, everybody. You caught me. I was searching frantically on the internet to find some fun way to introduce myself and give you a chance to have a laugh this morning. But either I'm late or you're early. Anyways, okay, my slight attempt at being funny. Anyways, I thought that I would give you a glimpse of what life is like in here in Canada, and I had my skis and my winter jacket and boots and a good warm scarf and a great winter hat to give the impression that I was freezing up here in Canada. And although it is cold, we don't have any snow yet. It might be coming this week a little bit. But a big hello from Edmonton, Alberta. I know you're going to have a great conference as I'm going to be watching it upstairs in my TV room on a beanbag chair. I believe I was supposed to talk about the impact of school and what's going on in my business, but I've run out of time, and it's more important for me to say that I wish I could be there. I would be hugging everybody. I'd probably have tears because I feel like I've connected and gotten to know so many of you in our Facebook group. I appreciate all the support, the answers to questions, people sharing their challenges and their successes. It makes me feel like I'm part of something bigger than my little office where I work alone, and that's really important. We're all on a mission to change the world. So I wish you all the best today. Enjoy, get lots out of it, as I am. Take lots of notes. Take care. Bye.
Well, you got it. You got the gist, even though there was a little cutout. So thank you for watching. All right. We have another cat. Fairy cat mother t-shirt from Diane Letchworth. This one doesn't have a name on it. No.
You could read the number.
We can read the number, I guess. 964. 330-964. Anyone? Anyone? Yay? And it's dsquaredwellness.com. Her blog is amazing. You've got to subscribe to it. It's just so upbeat and so to the point and tongue-in-cheek and fun and funny and all that. And Patty Repko. All right. Okay. So, you know, we talk about balance between omega-3 and omega-6 fats. This is barrage oil, which is your best source of GLA, okay? And GLA is super important for hormonal balance and blood sugar and a whole lot of others, and Steph Jackson gets it. All right.
You should be on the Price is Right. That was great.
That was great. And now we have MCT oil. You've heard of that, medium chain triglycerides. Great for gut health, great for brain health. There's a whole book called Alzheimer's, What If There Really Was a Cure, that shows how an MD who turned around her husband's Alzheimer's. And amazing stuff with this MCT oil. And Nina Warda. And this is a powdered probiotic strain with Acidophilus, Plantarum, Rhamnosus, Paracaceae, and Salivarius. And if you have SIBO, check with Steph to make sure it's D-lactic acid free. And if not, give it to somebody or wait till you get your SIBO cleared. Mia! All right. We're done. All right. So next I have the opportunity to introduce someone I wish was here in person. Can you see us? Can you see me, Donna? Can she see us or do we just see her? She can't. She can hear me, though. I love you, Donna. I wish I could hug you and I wish you could be here. Mwah. Donna came to me at first as a patient, dealing with hormonal stuff, dealing with weight and insulin resistance and thyroid problems, but she didn't know all that. She just knew she had this weight issue and she was tired all the time and brain fogged. And we started working together and she became a dear friend. We worked together for a while. She joined a year-long program. And then I discovered all her great talents and skills. She's a chemical engineer and she goes into the chemical plants to teach them how to handle freaking dangerous chemicals safely, and she does all the safety stuff for them. So she has a journey which she can tell you about, but her passion really is to help people to use chemicals safely when needed and avoid them when not. And she's going to talk about some of the ways you can protect your microbiome by protecting yourself from these environmental toxins that are all around us. And I wish you could be here, but she's not, so we will, you know, we'll just see you from there. Can we bring her big, make her bigger for a little bit so everybody can see her before the slides? I know you can flip them back and forth, right? There she is. Hi, Donna. So everybody say
hi.
One, two, three. Welcome, Donna. Mwah. All right, so take it away, Donna. Is this cool? She's in Pennsylvania, yeah? I'm looking there. Oops.
Okay.
All right, you can go.
Hello, everybody. So sorry, I can't be here. Can you hear me? Okay, great. I'm so sorry, I can't be there to be live with you today, but I'm so excited that we have the technology to actually do this from here in Pennsylvania. So I'm so excited because I have so much information that would be so valuable to you and to your customers and clients, because no matter what your clients are recovering from, no matter what they think they may have, from, you know, minor illnesses all the way up to major illnesses, everyone can benefit from what I want to talk to you about today, because it is crucial to just realize that our planet is becoming polluted. Our planet is becoming almost uninhabitable if we keep going in the direction that we're going. So I want to just make you aware of some of those things. So first of all, I want to tell you that, wait a second, oh man, I'm trying to use this. Wait a second, my screen. Did you lose my screen or do you see me? Okay, wait a second. Share your screen. People can see you. Okay, there it is. I see it. So let's go to the next one. That's what I'm trying to have trouble finding. There it is. Okay, I think I have it now. Okay, so why should you listen to me? Because I have 30 some years of experience as a chemical engineer. And because I started as a chemical engineer back in 1981, I have seen firsthand how chemicals get into our food and our drinking water and our products and just into the air that we breathe. I started as a chemical engineer in 1981. That's me in a Monsanto plant. I actually worked for Monsanto. I don't like to tell too many people that. But I am not responsible in any way for working in the GMO department. But I actually worked in a department that was probably a little worse than that. I made butylbenzyl phthalate in the department where I worked, and butylbenzyl phthalate is a major hormone disruptor. And may or may not have been the cause of some of my problems, but we'll get into that. So that's me now. check out the shoes. I guess you could say that I've come a long way in 34 years, but my attire obviously hasn't changed very much. That's what I wear when I go into chemical plants. So I want to show you a picture of a real chemical plant. That one's a refinery actually, and I want just show you that to give you an idea of what I mean when I say I go into chemical plants. This is where we make all the stuff that I'm going to teach you about. So I just wanted you to have that picture in your mind. And I could give you this picture also, which shows a leak in a chemical plant. That's probably steam coming out of there, but it very well may be something else more hazardous. But that's what a chemical plant looks like at night. When something's coming out of the pipes. Another picture I'd like to show you, this, believe it or not, is a food processing plant. They actually make food in that equipment there. So what do you think are the chances of contamination? What do you think can get into our food just from the industrial nature of where things are made and when cooked? Now this is a less frightening example, of course. This is a 100,000 gallon tequila storage tank, and as a safety professional, if I go into a plant and I look at that storage tank, I get a little scared because you can see the three in that red diamond tells me that tank is very, very flammable. And so I would be concerned about that, but you know, as far as health issues, it says here in the blue diamond, it says that's a zero. And that means there are no health issues related to tequila in 100,000 gallon quantities, which I think is questionable. I do want to tell you, though, I have had this question many times when I've given this presentation. I don't think there's a giant worm in the bottom of that tank, but I never know. Okay. So another example that is not frightening at all, this is a picture of myself and my lovely daughter last February of this year. We went to a Young Living harvest. So we went to see where they make Young Living essential oils, which I knew you guys have had a chance to talk to Artemis at this conference, and he is telling everyone about essential oils and has a table, I believe, there. And which I was supposed to be helping with. I'm so sorry, Artemis. Anyway, I went there and I saw how they make those oils, and I did verify that they are chemical free, that they are totally pure. And I'll tell you later on in this presentation a little bit more about how I go to chemical plants now and I verify that they are chemical free and that the products are acceptable for people who follow me on my website. Okay, so I don't like to show these pictures. This is me in January of 2012 and me in February of 2013. So that was maybe 189 pounds, I believe, down to 140 pounds. I've since lost a lot more weight. I am down another 10 pounds probably. But I don't have any pictures of that, so I decided to just show you this one. So basically, what I want you to understand is that over the course of my career, I obviously accumulated toxins, as you can see in this picture. Those toxins caused me to experience many symptoms, which included weight gain. It would seem likely that the result of my exposures and all those chemical plants is what caused this, okay? But my job was to keep the people safe. My job was to keep those workers safe in that chemical plant. So I put respirators on them. I put, chemical resistance suits on them. I monitored the atmosphere around them. We did everything we could, and we kept those exposures at zero. And of course, at that time, I kept my exposures at zero also, or very close to zero. So although it's possible that some of my exposures were from those times, I really believe that my exposures that caused me to get into this condition of toxicity were more from my food and my drinking water and my personal care products. And I was not the kind of person that ate burgers and fries all night and had Twinkies for dessert, okay? I was very health conscious, and still I got into this situation. So it's becoming imperative that we do something. So I have a question here. It says, how did we get here and what can we do about it? And that's what I want to talk to you about today. That's the main thrust of my presentation, is how did we get here? Do we have chemical companies like Monsanto sitting around their boardrooms and saying, let's make this world a toxic place? Do you think like Procter & Gamble and some of those other big companies, do you think they're out there sitting around the boardroom plotting this? And my answer to that is no, they're not. They're just a group of people working for a company doing their jobs. We have engineers trying to make the plants run. We have marketing people that are trying to sell these products. We have researchers that need to get their products below a certain level of certain contaminants. That's their goal. They're told to get below this amount. That's what they do, or that's what they test for. So you see, nobody talks to anybody else, though. The researchers don't talk to the marketers, and the marketers don't talk to the decision makers. And so it's one big entity, and we see it as a big evil company. But the point is, they're just trying to do what the consumer wants, what we want. So, you know, back in the 1950s, we wanted long shelf life. We wanted Betty Crocker quick mixed cakes. And we wanted things that would cook, you could cook dinner in 30 minutes or less. And we wanted drinks the color of that bright blue stuff that kids like to drink. We wanted cheese that squirts out of a can, right? Okay? We asked for all that stuff. And what we didn't do is we did not say, oh, yeah, we also want it to be safe. Because I guess it never occurred to people. Or maybe we just kind of implied that we wanted it to be safe, but nobody paid attention to that. And so what we have is all these things, long shelf life and quick cooking and bright blue colors, and yet it's not safe for us anymore. And that's the point. So what can we do about it? What can we do about it is we can learn. We can learn from that. We can say, okay, now we're going to demand something else. We're going to demand all these things that we want. But the main important thing is we want it to be safe. We want the company, and things are starting to change, and I'm getting really excited about this because I've been doing these presentations for maybe since 2009. And back in 2009, nobody wanted to hear this. And back in 2009, it was almost impossible to go out and get alternatives to the things I'm going to show you. And so people couldn't really follow me at that time, but now, you know, we're what, 6 years later, we're seeing organic eggs in the supermarkets, and we're seeing, you know, lots of organic foods, and we're seeing gluten-free products, and we'll talk about those in a little bit. But but we're seeing chemical-free products when we ask for them, and we're seeing more and more companies jump into the marketplace and show us that things can be made safely. Okay? So now I'm going to play a little game with you, which is going to be weird because I'm not going to have a lot of feedback, okay? But I always play this game, and it really illustrates the point I'm trying to make, and that is that even though we're trying to reduce the chemicals in our lives, we can do it based on risk. So you could do it like I do it. Like, I live a normal life. You can see me. I have a normal house. I don't live in the cave in the wilderness. I don't eat berries. Well, sometimes I eat berries for dinner, but I don't do it because that's all I have. I lead a very normal life, and you can too. You can get the chemicals out of your life. You can teach your customers to get the chemicals out of their lives, and you can do it without having to completely alter your life. Okay, so this little game, I'm going to pretend that I'm giving you some presents, okay? And I have three identical boxes in front of you, and you get to choose one of those boxes. You can have whatever's in it. I will tell you that one of the boxes contains $10 million. Unfortunately, one of the other boxes contains a deadly bomb that will explode the minute you open the box. Now, I realize that I'm doing a safety talk here, and I probably shouldn't be talking about deadly bombs, but just trust me, I need this for my my presentation and to make a point. Anyway, the third box contains dinner for two at your favorite restaurant. Okay, so normally I ask, is anyone willing to play this game? The odds are 1 in 3 that you will get the $10 million, but the odds are also 1 in 3 that you would die. And so most of the time I get nobody taking me up on this. Sometimes I get some daredevils. So what I do is I say, okay, well, what if I had 10 boxes? Okay, and each one of those boxes, 8 of them anyway, contain dinner for two to your favorite restaurant. And we still have that deadly bomb in one of those boxes, and we still have the $10 million. So now your odds are getting a little better. 1 in 10 that you could win that money. But it's also 1 in 10 that you would die. And so again, I don't get a lot of takers. So then I change it. Now I have 100 boxes. And I could go up to 1 million boxes. And eventually, I'm going to get somebody that's willing to play that game. Because somebody's going to realize that the reason, or the goal, actually, for this game is not to win $10 million. The goal is to survive. And so, you know, when you get 1 million boxes, you've only got a 1 in 1 million chance of dying, and the rest of the boxes you would survive. And that's the way to look at it. Like, what actually is my goal? Okay? So what we do in the chemical industry and in engineering is we talk about risk. But when we talk about risk, we don't just talk about the consequences. We don't just talk about how bad it is that can happen. Like, you know, what is the risk of flying in an airplane versus driving in your car? Okay, we look at airplane crashes and we think they're so much worse than a car crash. But in actuality, it's more likely that you will have a car accident than it is that you will have a plane crash, that you will be involved in a plane crash. And why is that? It's because the frequency is higher. It's more likely that you will be in a car than in an airplane, because you're in cars more often than you're in airplanes. Everyone is, okay? There are more cars on the road than there are airplanes in the sky. So the frequency of occurrence plays a huge part in the risk that you're taking. And that is where you can look at your life and you can, instead of being afraid of all these awful consequences, you can look at your life and the likelihood that you would be exposed or experience those consequences. And then you can change your life based on risk. And you can do it based on what's acceptable to you. So what's acceptable to you may not necessarily be what's acceptable to everyone else. I'm sure that while I was playing my little risk game, there were people in the room who volunteered to play the game at different times. You know, some were willing when there was only a couple of boxes, and other people waited till I had 1 million boxes or more before they would play that game. And that's because their risk tolerance is different, right? There's a level of risk that each of us is willing to accept. And this level is different for everyone, and it can change for people at various times. You know, you can be willing to accept a whole lot of risk when you're young and single, And then suddenly when you get married and you have children, now all of a sudden your risk level changes. You have a much lower tolerance for risk. So the important takeaway from this is just that in order to create good circumstances in our lives, we need to make good choices. We need to look at our lives and say, what are the biggest risks in our lives and how can we minimize them? So that's what I say when I'm in a chemical plant and when I'm in my living room. I say, look at the things that you do every day. Reduce those hazards and you would get the biggest risk reduction. Okay? So let me give you an example. Let's take chlorine, for example. We're going to talk about water. And we know that chlorine is bad to be exposed to. Well, in my life, okay, number one, I don't have city water in my house. So there is no chlorination in my water. So I'm not getting chlorine there. I have a swimming pool, but I don't ever go in it. So I'm not getting chlorine in that either. Okay. And I've taken all the chlorine out of my cleaning products. I clean mostly with essential oils now, but even before I learned about essential oils, I had taken all the chlorine out of my cleaning products. So there's a case where I have almost no exposure. So my risk of chlorine-related illnesses is very low at this point. But there could be someone else who lives in an apartment and has city water and it's chlorinated and they don't filter it. Maybe that person has a hobby and swims every day for health reasons or to stay in shape. And maybe that person also cleans houses for a living with chlorinated products. Now you can see where that person has a much higher risk of chlorine exposure. So basically we have to look at the things we do every day and decide, is my risk high or low? And then we address the ones where it's high. Okay, so here's a bunch of things that you might do every day. You might swim, you might clean your house, you might chew gum. It's funny, one time I was given this presentation and my husband was with me, and he comes to all my presentations. He's even listening to this one now. And he had heard me say this so many times. And after maybe about the 50th time he heard me say it, he says, what about my gum? Because we had taken out the chemicals from our lives, but we hadn't looked at the fact that he chews gum every day, all day long. And unfortunately, I can report right now that I have not yet found a good substitute. So he's eating, clean organic peppermints instead of gum now because we can't find a gum that I found acceptable. Anyway, a lot of people put lots of perfume on every day. Some people lay on the floor on top of the Scotch guarded and fire retardant carpets. Some people drive in traffic and inhale all the smog and pollution there. Some people ride a bike and that doesn't make them immune to the pollution. In fact, it makes it worse. So you see, this is a list of things, and where you start and where you would start with your customers is have them make a list of the things that they do often. Okay, if you fly in an airplane every 5 years, then we're not going to worry about the risk. And there is chemical risk to flying in an airplane. There's fire retardants on the seats and lots of other exposures as far as the fuel and stuff that they use. Anyway, if you fly every 5 years, then we're not going to consider that a major hazard. If you're a business person and you get on an airplane, three times a week, then we're going to have to look at that. Does that make sense? Of course, they can answer me. Okay, so where I'm going to go now is how do toxins get into our bodies? This is very important because it has a lot to do with the likelihood that they will get in there in the first place. Okay, there's four ways. We can inhale toxins. They can be in our house, in our air. We could be taking a shower in chlorinated water and we can inhale the chlorine. We can also absorb it through our skin. So when I'm doing a personal care presentation, I always say, hey, don't put anything on your skin that you would not be willing to eat. And that is really important to remember because sometimes you can absorb things better when you're getting it on your skin as opposed to when you're eating it. Okay? We can also ingestion. That's an obvious one. We can eat things. Basically the preservatives and things that are in our foods. And you can get toxins into your body by injection. And that is way beyond the scope of this presentation, and I would warn you not to get me started if we're going to talk about vaccines and things, because there's a considerable amount of chemical exposure there. But we're going to have to save that for another presentation. Anyway, so let me give you some examples of how we get chemicals into our bodies. Okay, we have airborne contaminants, which get into our body when we inhale them. Okay, that's carpet, furniture, cookware, other things that will off-gas into your home. Okay, I personally took all of the carpets out of my house. I have hardwood floors, which, again, could also be a problem if you have them refinished with some kind of a varnish or something that you're inhaling. But for the most part, buying pre-finished hardwood floors or ceramic tile and putting that into your house is much better than carpet, because there's lots of things like fire retardants and other things that come into your air and you breathe them. There's heating systems in our houses that give off toxins. We bring dry cleaning into our house. We have candles and fragrances. We have cleaning products. We bring things into our house on our shoes. And I often say, if somebody asks me what is the one thing you could do to reduce your exposures inside your house, I would say don't wear your shoes in the house. Have inside shoes and outside shoes. And when you go to the local Wawa or the gas station or whatever, that's a convenience store around here. When you go to the convenience store or when you go to the gas station, or visit someone in the hospital, or don't wear your inside shoes. Wear your outside shoes, come in, get changed, and you won't put all that stuff into your house. And then of course there's other things like mold and fungus that can grow in your house. So what do we do about that? We can ventilate, we can filter, and we can purify. And I'm not going to get into how we do that, but the first two are obvious. Ventilate your house, open your windows. Filtering, you can put in filters, better heating filters and other filters in your house that will filter the air and help remove the toxins. But I want to talk just for a second about purification, because I have had people asking me about purification of the air. And there are some air cleaners out there. Some work, some don't. So I just wanted to caution you on that. Like if you put a big filter in, you're going to get some improvement. And if you open your windows and get ventilation, you're going to get improvement. Because I will tell you that the outside air is much cleaner than what's in your house. I can guarantee you that. Whether you have an energy efficient house or an old house, I can guarantee you that the air from the outside is going to be safer to breathe than what's in your house. But the one thing I want to mention about purification is that I've been getting a lot of questions about ozone generators. Ozone generators generate ozone in the house, and I want to caution you against them, because although they can work, I've seen them work industrially and clean up the air very well, there's a lot of things to take into consideration, and mainly it's because ozone is really reactive, and so there could be some things in your air that would react with the ozone and create something worse than what you're trying to clean out. So be very careful when you're looking at purification systems. Like really connect with an expert, send me an email, or find somebody that can really tell you whether or not you're making an improvement. I personally don't purify my air. I do filter it and I ventilate. Okay, so then water contaminants. Okay, so when we're talking about our water, the water that comes into our house, we count on that. From hundreds of years ago, they invented how to take water from a main source and get it to the various households. And there's been a lot of problems with that. And the main one, of course, is bacteria. And so, bacteria in your water can make you sick right away, right? Whereas some of the chemicals that they add to the water, they're going to make you sick over time. Okay, so that's basically the choices we have with water purification in the public eye. You have right now your household water comes in and it can be unhealthy, but there are things you can do about it, because the water company has to add chemicals. There are 14 different regulations that require public water companies to do things to the water to get it to your house, what they call safely, okay? There are chemicals that enter the water supply, like runoff from fields and runoff from construction. That all goes into the water supply, and the water company doesn't even have anything to do with that, okay? There are some substances that are naturally in your water supply, like radon, for example. Okay. And then there's also, like I said, the mold and the fungi and the bacteria that grow in the water system. I will tell you from my experience in water plants that most of the piping is really old. So like, you know, over here, I live near Philadelphia. Okay. So imagine how old some of that underground piping is and what could be growing in there that the water company doesn't really have anything to do with. They just put the water in the pipes, send it to your house, and what comes out is what you get, right? So in order to make up for all of that, what the water company likes to do is they like to add more chlorine. They call it residual chlorine. They add enough so that it eats up all the bacteria that's in the water when they add it, and then there's some extra that goes down the pipe and into your house. So and what they want is for there to be some excess chlorine when it gets to your house, and that way we know all of the bacteria have been killed. But then that excess chlorine comes out. It comes out in your shower, and it comes out in your drinking water, and when you're cooking. And so you have a lot of opportunity to be exposed to that chlorine, and not to mention the fluoride that's also put in there. Okay, so what do we do about the water? You have to research it. There's a lot of sites, free sites online. You could go to just the EPA website, epa.gov, okay? And you can go to that website and click on drinking water and learn more than you could ever imagine about drinking water. But most importantly is you can pull up a list of what is in your drinking water. If you are in a municipality, you just pull it up on the screen and it will tell you what the assay is, what exactly is in that water. You know, some places fluoridate, some places don't. So you just have to look and pull that up. If you live with a well, then you have to get the Department of Health to come in and do a water test. It's very simple. All Department of Health in every area will come in and do a water test, or you can hire a private company to come in and do a water test. And then once you find out what's in your water, then you have to decide, what do I want to take out? And then you choose a purification system or even a filtration system to get out whatever you want to get out. So just a rule of thumb, not a rule of thumb, but more like just a couple of examples. I know that I didn't do this research, but I follow Mike Adams, the health ranger, and he did a bunch of research on the inexpensive water filters. And he found that the one called Zero Brand, Z-E-R-O, is very, very good at removing most contaminants that would come in your drinking water. So if you're going to put an inexpensive filter on your water faucet, the best place to put it, the best one to get would be that Zero one. And the reason he picked that one is because it also pulls out fluoride. Now, if you don't have fluoride in your water, then you're great, and you can use Brita, for example. Brita gets a lot of things out very inexpensively, but it does not touch fluoride. And it even says on there, your teeth are saved. You still get your fluoride if you use this filter. Okay, don't let them convince you that that's true. Okay. Right. Now, if you can't filter, or you know, you live in an apartment and there's no place to put the filtration system, then your next best bet would be bottled water. And I'm not going to get into that because that's another whole science, but you got to do your research and make sure that your bottled water is coming in containers that are not adding more pollutants to the water than you're trying to remove from yours. Okay, so after water comes food. So there's some very hazardous food ingredients that are in your food. And some of them are, well, if they're in your food, they are approved in one way or another by, you know, FDA, or if you're in a different country, whatever the governing agency is. Okay, but in the United States, there's this term called GRAS, G-R-A-S. And that stands for generally recognized as safe. Okay, now, once a product is given this classification, then manufacturers are allowed to put it in anything. Okay, it doesn't matter how much you use, they can just put it in anything. Okay, so, you know, an example that would be salt. Okay, unless you're labeling your product low sodium, you can pretty much put as much salt in as you want, right? Pepper, whatever, you can put those ingredients in there. Okay, but some other examples of things that have made it on the GRAS list are, ready for this? Sodium hexametaphosphate, methyl cellulose, I worked in a plant that makes methyl cellulose. Actually, they make it from paper. We won't get into that. Magnesium stearate, we can see that in vitamins. It's not even necessary to be in the vitamins. It's only in there because it makes the equipment run faster. It's a lubricant. And so those of us who take a lot of vitamins, we're getting a ton of magnesium stearate, and it's mostly made from GMO corn. But it's listed on this GRAS list, and therefore generally recognized as safe. That means you can eat it in any quantity. Here's some other ones. Propylene glycol, potassium sorbate. I'm going to tell you in a little bit what potassium sorbate does to us, but it's on the GRAS list. They can use it wherever. Okay, now there are some products that are perfectly okay to be on that GRAS list. One example is some of the essential oils with Young Living have achieved that GRAS certification. So, you know, if you have a product and it has achieved that GRAS certification, that's good news to you, because you can market this better and people will assume that it's safe and everyone will use it. But those of us who are on the consumer end, we have to look at these things and at least question whether or not it really is safe when it's labeled GRAS. Okay? So then some other things that's in our food. We've got toxins in vitamins and supplements, and it's not just magnesium stearate. It's a lot of things. If you want to talk about which vitamins would be that have the least chemicals and which ones would have the most, I would say that you should start with tablets would have the most, because they have special coatings and special things in there that make them stick together like tablets and keep them in the solid form. So tablets would have the most chemicals. Capsules would be next, okay? Gel caps are somewhere in there between tablets and capsules, I would say. Capsules, you know, sometimes you can get very pure vitamins in a cellulose capsule that is relatively safe, and, you know, the vitamin itself is doing more for you if you take it than. But then there are liquid and, colloidal type vitamins and things that are in suspension. And so liquids are more easily absorbed, and they don't have to put as many chemicals in them, because they can be, they can just go to you as they are. The only caution I have with liquid vitamins would be the preservatives, because there's a lot of times that sodium benzoate, which we'll talk about, and potassium sorbate are put in vitamins when they're liquid to keep them preserved. So if you're going to use liquid vitamins, the ones that need to be refrigerated are probably better than the ones that don't, because if they need to be refrigerated, it's because they minimize the toxins and the preservatives. Okay, now improper food preparation and storage is another way that toxins get into our food. You know, if we're not clean, we cut up meat and then we put vegetables on there, and you guys know all about that, but that's another example of how things get into your food. But in the plant, there are requirements to clean in place, especially in the meat industry. I have seen solutions of various chemicals being used to clean the equipment in between each time that a new food is placed on that line. And those chemicals that are in that cleaning solution are pretty harmful. Sometimes they're solvents. Some of them are listed on the GRAS list, but some of them aren't. And so we have to be really careful. I do know that if you buy organic produce, organic grass-fed meats, they have different cleaning solutions for those. So I'm positive that there are hazardous chemicals and the ones that are not organic. So that's another place that we have to look that we wouldn't think of. Okay? And then where your food came from really matters, because, again, you know, you can look on the label, you can buy a can of, peas, and you could look on the label and it'll say water and peas, or probably say water, peas, and salt. But it won't say, oh yeah, by the way, there's pesticides and herbicides and all these other antifungal things that we put on those peas at the farm before we sent them to the manufacturer, who then takes them in and cans them. So we have to look at where it came from and understand that just because it says peas, water, and salt in that can, there's a whole lot of other things that could be in there, okay? Including things that could be leached from the can itself and not just what was in the peas. Okay, so now how do we get chemicals into our body from our products. Okay, now I this is a little bit different from what I you know, was going to talk about today. This is a kind of an extra slide, I guess, because I want to show you that there are other ways to get things in our products. And so by products, I mean personal care products, and I mean cleaning products. There are toxins in cleaning products, and there's no labeling requirement. That's the thing that I want to tell you the most about, is that when you're buying cleaning products, you have no idea what's in them. In this country, they are not required to be labeled. In many other countries, they're not required to be labeled. There could be just about anything in there, and you, the only way you can tell is if you look at the warnings on there. Okay? All right. So moving on, how do we clean up our food and our products? We have to learn to understand labels. We have to learn to recognize dangerous ingredients. We have to research and purchase safe alternatives. Very important, research and purchase safe alternatives. Okay? We have to buy fresh, unprocessed organic foods. We have to consider making our own products. We have to also understand advertising techniques and deceptions. And that's what I started to hint at when we were in the beginning, when I said, how did we get here? We have to understand that advertising is meant to make us buy a product, okay? And everything they say may not be true. It may not be a lie, but it may not be true for us. And so we have to understand what kinds of messages are coming through in the advertising, and we have to choose our products based on what's true for us, not necessarily what's true for the people creating the commercials. Okay, I have a slide in here that doesn't belong here, so I'm gonna keep it in here just to tell you about it. I told you earlier that we never put anything on our skin that we wouldn't be willing to eat, and I am very serious about that. I won't put anything on my skin. If I won't put my finger in that jar and put it in my mouth, I will not use it, okay? I'm not saying it has to taste good, okay? But I am saying that you should be able to. One exception to that is large molecule substances. I always get asked this question about sunscreens because they put titanium dioxide and zinc oxide, which can be really harmful if you can absorb it. But the reason they put it in sunscreens is because it's a large molecule. It won't go through your skin, and you can use it. However, I'm not talking about the nanoparticle kind. I get that question all the time too. Sometimes sunscreens have nanoparticles, which are really, really, really tiny particles, and then it does go through your skin, and then it is harmful. Okay? So just to mention that again, because it's really important, and to give you this resource, the www.ewg.org, Environmental Working Group. I will always refer people to that group. They have a sunscreen database. They have a skin deep database that you can look up all your cosmetics. They have food databases. They have, you know, I keep one on my cell phone. It's just a database that tells me which produce has the most contaminants in it and which doesn't. So ewg.org is an excellent free resource that everybody should be on. You should be checking everything against what they have in their databases. Okay. So now I want to teach you a little bit about labels, okay? Here's how food labeling works. I like to use this example here. Ingredients are listed in decreasing order of weight. So you see where, in this case, it says, you know, water, chicken stock, enriched pasta. Okay, so there's more water in there than there is chicken stock. That's all you really know. Then there's wheat, you know, then they have in parentheses what's in the pasta. And that's also listed in order of decreasing weight. Okay, if it's less than 2%, it does not have to be on the label, or it can be listed in any order if you want to put it on the label. If it's listed in the nutritional facts up top, like if it says there's, you know, vitamin A in there, they don't necessarily have to put it in the ingredients. Okay, and the nutritional facts apply to the specific serving size on the label. That is super, super important, okay? Because a lot of times you can buy like a can of soda and it'll say servings 2.5 per can. Now, I don't know about you, but if I were to pick up a can of soda and drink it, I wouldn't drink, you know, less than half of it and put it away for later, right? It goes bad. It loses its carbonation and everything. So most of the people that drink a can of soda are getting 2.5 times what is actually on that label. Okay? Now, when things get approved to be put on a label, when things get approved to be put in a product, they're based on FDA testing, okay? Now, the FDA itself doesn't do the testing. This is also really important. FDA requires the testing. So you go out and you get a private lab, you get this testing done, and you show that you are below all of the limits that FDA has set, okay? So let's say we have, I love to use sucralose as an example on this one. Sucralose, it's Splenda, basically, and it's a substance, and there is a limit to how much a person is allowed to have in an 8-hour period each day, okay? So there's a limit because there are health hazards, but the only requirement is that the serving size be less than, or that the serving size contains less than the hazardous amount. So if there's a hazardous substance in a can of soda, they would make the serving size small enough so that you're under the requirement. But then we don't pay attention to those serving sizes, so then we would drink the whole can and we're getting 2.5 times what we're supposed to be getting. Make sense? That is the biggest loophole in labeling that I have found and I try to teach people about. Okay. This is another example, Minute Maid. It says it's all natural, 100% natural, right? All right, there is no definition in FDA, and I've looked at the Canadian regulations, and I've looked at some other countries, and I have not found a definition for all natural. So pretty much you can put anything you want in a carton and label it all natural, okay? Technically, you could put cyanide in a jar and label it all natural, and that would be true. Okay? Now, the other thing I don't like about this is that I have this highlighted. It's pasteurized. Okay? Now, that's not natural, right? That fruit punch, even if it does have only juice in it, juice isn't naturally pasteurized. So that's misleading. And then if you look at the main ingredients there, it's got pure filtered water. Okay, I'll give them that. That's good. They at least filtered it. And then they have high fructose corn syrup, which is anything but natural. Okay? Now, the next one I have is Splenda. And the other thing I want to tell you about, besides the serving size, okay, is to look at the ingredients. Okay? It has dextrose, maltodextrin, and then sucralose. So it's got more dextrose in it than it has sucralose. And what is dextrose? Dextrose is a sugar. And the reason they had to put other things in there besides the sucralose is because they had to make the serving size so small in order to get it to be non-hazardous that they couldn't sell it in that small of a serving size. So they added things like dextrose and maltodextrin, which is also a sugar, as your body would see it. And they make it flow better, and they put it in these little packets and say, okay, you know, serving size is one packet, and this is what you get. But number one, diabetics are using Splenda to get away from sugar, and they're not seeing that there's sugar in it. By the way, there's a new stevia out on the market now that is also mixed with sugar. You got to be really careful with that. Stevia is fine, but the sugar that they put in with it isn't, okay? And then the other thing is, they can claim to be calorie free or contain no sugar, but they just have to be under the limit. So you can have a half a gram of sugar in something and still call it sugar free. You can have a half a calorie and still call it calorie free. So you got to watch these loopholes, because what you're seeing is not necessarily the truth. Okay, so things that are not on the labels. They have processing aids that they use that are not on the labels unless it stays in the product in greater than 2%, like the magnesium stearate that we talked about. Okay? Ingredients that are present in quantities less than 2% by weight are optional. There's also harmless markers that companies are allowed to just add to their products so that they can identify it We have no idea what this is, and they're not required to disclose that. There's also herbicides and pesticides and GMOs that we don't know about because, like I said, you get a load of peas and you put them into a product, you're just going to say the ingredient is peas. You're not going to say peas that contain pesticides and herbicides and things. Okay, so again, label confusion. This slide is just meant to summarize. We've got serving size, we've got calories, we've got fats and trans fats I didn't mention, but you can still have a half a gram of trans fats in there and call it zero. And again, we talked about sugars and all natural and generally recognized. Okay, I already mentioned about cleaning products being not required to be labeled. And I just want to give you this EWG.org again, okay, because that's important, even though we're not talking cleaning products today. Okay, so now I want to get into some ingredients. I'm not going to get through all of them, but I know that I have an alarm set, and that's probably going to go off in like a minute. But that was for the original time we started, so I think I still have a few minutes to go through some of these, so I'm going to do that. Okay, so ingredients. We talked a lot about artificial sweeteners, all right? And what I want to do is just link the hazards of these artificial sweeteners so that you can get it in your head about why they're so bad. The most important for sucralose, besides the fact that it increases body weight, and remind me again why we're using sucralose. I have a problem with the fact that the data actually shows that body weight is increased in people who substitute that for sugar. But even more importantly, it decreases the amount of beneficial bacteria in the intestines, which I know you guys have been talking about all weekend, and that should be a real huge red flag for using sucralose. Okay, aspartame, you know, linked to brain cancer and blindness, okay? It's contaminated with methanol, which converts to formaldehyde in your body. It gives you high blood pressure, headaches, nausea. I'm sure that's affecting your gut microbiome. Okay, sorbitol, that one is a big one. Bloating, abdominal cramps, pain, diarrhea, flatulence. Isn't that what we get when our gut microbiome is messed up? People with digestive diseases should avoid this all the time. And it's found in sugar-free gums, which is another reason why I haven't found a gum that is acceptable for my husband yet. Okay, high fructose corn syrup, you're probably sick of hearing this, but you know, they may contain mercury. It's broken down by the body in a different way than normal sugar, and again, would have a serious impact on gut microbiome because there could be some strains of bacteria that would prefer the fructose over other forms of sugar. And I'm sure Steph, you know, I heard, Steph, your presentation was awesome, and I know you covered stuff like that, so I'm not going to get into that. Meat and dairy products, all right, if you're not buying grass-fed, organic, you know, free-range types of meats, then you're going to have antibiotics in there, you're going to have pesticides, you're going to have growth hormones, and the best way to get your meat that doesn't have those things is to look for some of these examples, okay? Synthetic dyes, again, I mentioned that we don't want, you know, I mean, lots of kids love to see blue drinks that are, you know, blue raspberry and stuff. I don't know about you, but I've never seen a raspberry that color. But the dyes are toxic in various ways. You know, we even have yellow number 10 that can damage DNA. So, you know, just I have these things on the slide for, you know, your purpose is just to look at. MSG is, you know, a lot of things. Some people are sensitive, some people aren't. It's very important to remember that MSG can be disguised. That's the most important thing I want you to know about MSG. You can read all these things that happen, but this is the slide that shows you the number of things that could actually be MSG. They're allowed to call it all these things on the label, okay? That's scary, okay? Something that's ultra-pasteurized could generally be a form of MSG, hydrolyzed yeast protein. Like, would you think MSG when you read that? But all of these things could be MSG. Okay, so I've got a message here that I have to stop. So I am going to leave these for you because you guys all have these slides and you can read about what all these things are doing. And I'm going to get to just the end of here where I have your resources, which I've given you most of them, but very important, you can go to the Environmental Working Group, you can go to EPA, and you can go to the CDC website. And even though we sometimes think those government agencies are our enemies, they do have a lot of information. Okay? I don't know if we can take questions and answers. No, I'm hearing a no that we can't. So you wanna make me big again, guys, and I can say bye to everyone? Okay, assuming I'm big. Bye, everyone.
Yay! Thank you, Donna, so much. We, if you can hang around after break, maybe we can do some questions after.
There's my email at the bottom of the slide here. Just send me an email with any questions you might have, okay?
Yeah. So if you, can you hear me, Donna? Can she hear me? No?
I can sort of hear you. Speak louder.
I'm speaking into the mic. Sorta. Maybe I get closer to your computer. So if you hang out, just hang out and watch the live stream. Maybe when we're wrapping up, we can open up for Q&A, and if you're available, we can text you in. Because the thing is, we're going to break, and some people have flights to catch, and that's the only reason. She didn't hear me.
Okay. Well, I will stay on the live stream for a little while.
Okay.
And again, there's my email. If anyone has specific questions, just send me the questions and I'd be happy to answer them.
Awesome. Thank you. 3:00.
You're welcome. Yeah. It's been my pleasure.
So scary, huh? Some of that stuff. It's pretty scary. Yeah. Some of the stuff you've heard before, but like I said before, you heard one or two little tidbits from that then for everybody it would be a little different tidbit. I always learn something new when I hear her speak. So we're going to come back in about 20 minutes, 2:50. At 2:50, we have three big raffles to do. We have the VIP raffle, and these are all for big prizes. The VIP raffle, the NEPT raffle, and the grand prize raffle. If you want to catch a ticket, an extra ticket to the grand prize, you can go back and see Justin back there and buy an extra ticket, and he'll put it into the box, and then we'll start up. We have an amazing close. We have more slides to go through, and then we have an amazing closing that you do not want to miss. And we also have that surprise we were supposed to have Friday night, for those of you who don't have to catch planes right after. That amazing surprise is going to happen at around, 4:15, 4:30-ish. So, and be around. It's going to be so much fun. I can't wait. Okay, so take your break, and we'll see you in a little bit. Thanks. What's that? Oh, yeah, wait, before you run off, anybody in NEPT, current, new, come on up to the stage. We're going to have a group photo taken.